What's up, Conference USA fans? Welcome into another episode of CUSA Insider Podcast, the official podcast of Conference USA. I'm Josh Yonas, filling in as host today for an exciting episode. We have two interviews for you today. Very excited about the two football coaches we got a chance to speak with coming off of some huge wins this past weekend. And then also, I'm joined by our Associate Commissioner for Football, Trey Stallings. Thanks so much for coming back on the pod, Trey.
Hey, man. It's great to be here. Always a pleasure to be on the show.
Yep. Got to get our football specialist on here to help me talk a little ball, but we're going to start off with a fun segment. We're going to bring back our top plays into the podcast, talk about some of the greatest things we saw from week two. There were some good ones, man. This was kind of hard to choose from, honestly. But let's take a look here. We start number five, UTEP Caden McConnell diving into the end zone for this two-point conversion. Got to love Scotty Walden just coming in. You know, this is in the second quarter. They're already up 22-6 at this point. He says, you know what? I'm going to go for two and just really kind of turn it up in this one. I think they needed the, you know, that kind of aggressiveness. And
absolutely. Yeah, you could tell just by the excitement of that play as well. It just brought even more energy into the crowd for sure. So it was a pleasure seeing that play and seeing the execution of it.
That was a good one. All right, we move to number four. Logan Fife dropping an absolute dime into the corner of the end zone to Donovan Fuppel. They've turned out to be quite the connection through a couple weeks. And I'll tell you what, some of the throws that Logan Fife is putting out there have been extremely impressive.
Hey, he is threading the needle, to say the least. And again, pinpoint passing, again, this offense looks totally different than what it did last season. So again, to see Logan kind of thriving in the offense right now, again, brings a smile to my face for sure. So again, hopefully they keep that up with a big matchup this weekend.
Yeah, I was gonna say, 2 years removed from Diego Pavia, they definitely needed this kind of electricity on offense for the Aggies. So hoping that continues for them. Number three, back to El Paso, we have Hassan Wilson going 94 yards to the house. This was the longest run by a CUSA player since Kenneth Dixon back in 2014. He had a 99-yard touchdown pass or touchdown run. This was a program record for UTEP. It's the longest play from scrimmage by any FBS school this season. Yeah, can you believe that?
That's impressive.
Yeah, I know.
That's super impressive. Like when I saw the play live, I was like, man, that has to be the longest run I've ever seen in Conference USA football, obviously, since my tenure. So it was an exciting play. Definitely seeing, as I would say, a guy get up the field.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, a lot of big plays in that UTEP matchup. We'll talk more about that later. We go number two here to Huntington, West Virginia, one of the biggest wins of the weekend. Ramon Green going 55 yards on this screen play. They were up against the wall, 3rd and 14 on this play. They needed something like this. Get them down into the red zone, set up the game-winning score for the Bears. I mean, the my favorite part about this play, though, is you watch 72 Mark Hutchinson at the top of the screen. I mean, he is hauling, escorting Ramon Green down the field on this play. You're an offensive lineman. I know you got to appreciate something like that.
Definitely appreciate the big guy hustling and trying to get in on the play for sure.
I saw Kanan Yarrow from New Mexico State was in our mentions. He was telling, you know, he's shouting him out for getting down the field for his boy. So he was definitely drawing attention for that one. And then number one, this is probably the easiest decision right here. Cam Cook, it's just a 31-yard rush, but oh, what, you thought he was down at the 32 there. He gets up, rolls over the defender, ends up getting down to the 5-yard line. I can't believe it. This reminds me of that play from that Auburn national championship game. I can't remember his name, but when he rolls off the defender, ends up going down and scoring on that one. I mean, just a crazy play. Cam Cook showing off some incredible athleticism for the Gamecocks.
Man, he has been impressive these last couple weeks. And I'll tell you, again, it's a pleasure watching a running back that has not only the power, but the quickness and the agility to get into, you know, get in and out of his cuts and breaks. Yeah, it's a treasure. It's definitely a treat.
Yeah, yeah. Charles Kelly in our interview later on in the show definitely talks a lot about the talent of his guys. Cam Cook, you know, one of those, some of the guys on the offensive line that they brought into this program to replace some of the big outgoing stars they had last year on their conference championship squad. So lots of good things happening in Jacksonville. We'll definitely talk more about that later. But first up in our two interview episode, we talked to head coach Ryan Beard from Missouri State, coming off their first win in the FBS era over Marshall this past weekend. So enjoy our interview with Coach Beard. Welcome back, CUSA Insider fans. We have one of two exciting interviews today. First up is Ryan Beard, head coach of Missouri State, coming off a huge comeback win at Marshall this past Saturday. Coach Beard, thank you so much for joining us.
Josh, thanks for having me, man.
All right. You've already been a part of some history there at Missouri State in your tenure. Added to that with the first FBS win in program history, what does that mean to you personally and to the Missouri State community as a whole?
Yeah, what an incredible day for our whole program, the entire institution of Missouri State University. When we first got here 5 years ago, Josh, I don't know if desperate can even, if that's even the word to use. It was really, really bad, and we had to instill some hope in this program. Went to back-to-back playoff appearances in FCS, decided to make the jump, and to be the head coach here when we got our first FBS victory, it's unbelievably meaningful just because our players have been through a lot. We had some tragic loss over the summer, and our players were able to kind of reflect on what life is really about and how truly blessed they are to be in a position to play college football. And they got a real sense of time is promised to no one. And I think that's part of our resiliency and part of what makes this culture something special.
You talk a lot about the emotions right there. When you got a moment to reflect on this win, what were some of the emotions that came up for you personally?
Yeah, I love this football team, and I'm extremely humbled and grateful to be the head coach here and just to do something I enjoy doing. It's extremely humbling in the gratitude. And one of the thoughts that comes to my mind, I'm a faith family guy, you know, to the sacrifice that our families make to allow us to do these types of things. My wife, Katie, is just the absolute rock of our family, and just for it all to come together and get a win like that on the road at a historic place like Marshall, you know, that's not an easy feat. They had gone 15 years straight winning their home opener. It's one of the toughest places to play in college football, and we went and got it done with a resilient win.
All of us have, you know, the why that we do what we do, and I know that you've probably channeled into a lot of that just in the few years you've been at the helm there. How did this win reinforce that for you?
I think it brought me right back to exactly why I got into it in the first place. What football did for my life and the impact that coaches had on my life, I want to give that back to our players and our student athletes and show them that, yes, you can be a great competitor on the field, but you can also be a great student. You can be a great friend. You can be a great mentor to younger people. And you can do things the right way. You know, right now things are so transactional. Here at Missouri State, we still believe in people first. If you come to campus, we don't have all the bells and whistles. You know, we don't have the millions of dollars. But what we do have are unbelievable people and families within this organization that make it truly special.
That's awesome. Well, how did you and the team celebrate, if at all, or was it just kind of on to the next game?
No, I winning is hard, Josh. You have to take a moment and celebrate. We were dancing around a little bit in the locker room. The guys were cutting loose, playing some of their favorite songs. And I told the guys, I said, listen, as hard as you work throughout the year, you have to give yourself a second to embrace what you've earned. Because if you don't do that, what are we doing in the first place? You know, if you don't find the joy in the winning and the joy in the competition, we're lost from the start. So we gave ourselves 24 hours to have a good time, celebrate. And like you hit on it earlier about the community's aspect, there were guys, a group of people that met us back at the airport. I mean, this was, I can't overstate how important this was and impactful it was for the city of Springfield.
You talk about embracing how hard it is to win games, but you did such a good job dodging that water cooler.
Hey, don't let the physique fool you. I was a decent player at one time. I still got a little bit of juice left. I know
you were a shifty DB. We know.
I'm a father of four too. So when I get in the backyard, I'm still sticking and moving, trying to be the best athlete I can be.
Oh, yeah. I've got a 3-year-old at home, and yeah, he keeps me agile for sure. Although I've got, I don't know if you can see it, I've got a mark on my nose here from him chucking something at me. So can't always dodge him.
There's no doubt.
What's been in the, you know, however many hours, 72 or so hours since that win, what's been some of the coolest texts or calls or just shout outs you've gotten from people in your past or just anyone around the game?
Yeah, I've been really fortunate to come up around some really, really quality coaches and just hearing from all those guys that I have such deep respect for. I mean, even immediately after the game, they had their own things to do, but they were calling, leaving voicemails, you know, shooting text. And that just shows that when you have legitimate connection and true relationships, that that will take you farther than anything in life, is building genuine relationships and connection with other individuals that you respect. And then again, man, I'm a family guy. I hearing from my family and seeing them smile and just having them have pride, because I went back to the sacrifice of, you know, the day we got back, we got up, went to church, and we were back in the office. It's back to the grind, and they are unbelievably supportive, and I love them so much for that.
That's awesome. Take us into that third quarter. You're down two scores on the road at a tough place to win, as you mentioned, in Marshall. What was your message to the team to fire them up and get to the, you know, ultimately get to that win?
Yeah, the most encouraging part about our halftime, Josh, was, you know, a lot of times in those situations, coaches come in and lose it and start screaming and all those different types of things. I think the composure is what led to our victory. We had leaders within the program. They were already talking about it. I don't know if you've been to Marshall. There's kind of a road to take to get back to the locker room, and you could hear it. It was a buzz. Hey, we're in the fight. Let's stay, you know, true to who we are. Let's be who we are. Unwavering belief, you know, relentless effort. We got them right where we want them. That was the best part. It didn't really take a big rah-rah speech from me. And that's what you want as a football team, is to be player-led.
There were so many big moments in that comeback. Obviously, the touchdown to Jamarié, the big pass to Ramon Green on that screenplay. What was the moment for you that really felt like the turning point?
Yeah, the screen was a great play. I think that was a huge, impactful moment for our offense. And then another part that I think people didn't really get a full sense of was, we turned the ball over in their territory, and we were able to hold them to a field goal. Right there was a huge, huge stop for our defense, and we were able to get some more third down stops in the fourth quarter. And that's what you want to be. You want to be a team. You don't want to have offense just killing guys and defense not being able to get any stops. And that's why, again, all the accolades and everything we've gotten this week, it was one of the most true team wins I've been a part of in my career.
How do you keep the team grounded as you get back to, you know, practice this week, looking ahead to SMU? You know, do you kind of let them embrace the excitement, or do they kind of share the balanced approach that, you know, the coaches normally have?
Yeah, I think they've done a good job of kind of taking our mentality of, listen, you can't get too down after games like the USC game when guys are telling you stink, this and that. And you also can't get too high when guys are patting you on the back, telling you how great you are. We have to be consistent. And that's one thing that I've voiced to the community leaders, our administration guys around here, is that to be a consistent winner, you have to do the right things day in and day out. You can never get sick of doing the little things, because every detail matters. And I think we have a mature football team that's been able to handle that the right way. Now, don't get me wrong, we got a unbelievable SMU club coming into town, well-coached, unbelievable players all around the field. So we'll have our hands full.
Yeah, I mean, there's already plenty of buzz around the program, both from the transition to FBS with the win over Marshall. And yeah, like you mentioned, bringing in a prominent SMU team this weekend. But getting that opportunity to host a game of that caliber, what's the buzz around campus like right now, around the team? I'm sure, obviously, you guys are riding high off the win, looking to create even more buzz against an ACC foe.
Yeah, the excitement's never been higher. And one of the things that we mentioned earlier in our talk is that for about 30 years, this place was desperate for any type of win / hope / whatever you want to call it. Now people understand that football can be successful in Springfield, Missouri. Right here at Missouri State, you can watch championship play. You can watch an exciting style of offense and defense. And you can watch teams like SMU come into Placer Stadium and compete against the Bears.
Absolutely. Well, Coach, you've done an incredible job there, kind of restoring the faith, right, as you just mentioned, to this Missouri State fan base, to the community. What's the message to those, you know, those groups for the rest of the season coming off the win?
The message is, if you stick to the course and you trust your processes, that we can maintain success. I think that's one thing that we strive to not be here as a flash in the pan. You know, you don't just want to have a few wins, a few good performances here and there. I think we can build a consistent winner here, but it's going to take resources. It's going to take the things to put around the players that make them want to stay, make them want to come at Missouri State, because as great as our people are, we need to put the resources around our players to keep this train moving.
Great stuff, Coach. Missouri State head coach Ryan Beard, thank you so much for coming on CUSA Insider Podcast, and best of luck the rest of the season.
Thanks, Josh. Hope you have a great day, man. Go Bears.
Thank you to Coach Beard for taking time out of a busy week prepping for their next game against SMU to talk, to reflect a little bit on that big win against Marshall. It was great getting to talk with him some more. Let's do a full recap of some of the week two action. We'll kind of start here. Let's go down through some of the big wins that we had. Started off in the early slate with that 11 o'clock game, Jack State Liberty. We kind of teased it, you know, when we talked about their top play earlier. I mean, there was a ton of explosiveness from Jack State in this game. We really expected a lot from this Liberty front coming into this game. Jack State just stuck to their game plan, something that they won a lot of games doing last year, which was running the ball well, ran for 338 yards in this one.
Yeah, when you control the line of scrimmage, it's definitely going to, again, give you an easier way or easier path to a victory for sure. Even though Liberty actually turned the ball over twice in that game, it still was a really good game even toward the end of the game. So it's just interesting to see how it's going to be interesting to see how the conference actually plays out throughout the rest of the season, knowing that this was, you know, one of our first conference games.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about the execution. That's something that Charles Kelly brought up too. I mean, turning turnovers into points, right, was one of the biggest things that they wanted to focus on. They didn't turn the ball over either. They kept, took care of the ball themselves and then really capitalized on some of those Liberty mishaps that I think was really the game, right? I mean, you turn the ball over two times and leads to 14 points and it's a 10-point game. I mean, you never know what could have happened. They also converted on all five trips to the red zone, which is something that I feel like we talked about a lot with them last year was, you know, they went 4-for-4, 5-for-5 in the end zone in all these games. And just that kind of high level execution is obviously something Rich Rod emphasized too. So you're seeing a lot of the same kind of philosophies there with that just execution and just getting the dubs.
It's almost like they have a mentality, right? Yep. I think Coach Trickett has done a really good job of, you know, taking what Coach Rich Rod did very well last season and kind of implementing some of the same game plan. So again, you see a situation where, you know, you have Turner's back on the offensive line. Again, you see more talent infused into the program and you see a consistent mentality, obviously, with what they want to get accomplished week in and week out.
Yeah, for sure. And they were winning in the trenches on both sides. They had 4 sacks and 6 TFLs on defense, too. So forcing, you know, a lot of tricky throws for Ethan Vasco on that side of the ball. But I think that I was still really impressed by Liberty's offense in this one. Obviously, they kind of came out a little sluggish against Maine. But, you know, when they were against the wall there in the second half needing to come back, they were still getting a lot of big plays and outgained Jack State 534 to 390 in this game. They, you know, Vasco had, you know, kind of quietly threw for 335, it felt like. but yeah, still lots of good from Liberty to be seen in this game. Excited to see kind of how both of these teams go from here after that one. We'll go next to Missouri State, another one that obviously is a high point of emphasis for this episode with, you know, talking to Coach Beard. This was the first time that they came back from 2 scores on the road since 2014 when they had to come back from down 14 against Northwestern State back then. So this is obviously a big win in multiple ways, you know, for any team to come back, you know, even at home, much less on the road. And then in, you know, your second FBS game and to get your first FBS win, this took a lot of grit, resilience, just a lot of really special characteristics from the Bears.
Yeah. And again, you take that win and you see what they can be able to build up on it, right? And again, to me, it's like a program defining win for them early in their transition to FBS. So again, I look at Coach B. I look at a guy, again, to your point earlier, he's very personable, a guy that has shown that he can get the job done at a high level. So hopefully, we continue to see some trends, right, that continues to point them in the right direction, and we'll see how they play out throughout the conference. I'm excited to see what they have next.
Yeah, I think one of the craziest notes that I saw, just, you know, kind of observing the stats a little bit, Jacob Clark had 304 of his 359 yards on just 10 passes. So obviously the big plays were coming. I think what you kind of hope to see more of is a little bit more consistent drives and not having to rely on big plays, because those big plays aren't always going to come when you start playing, you know, teams like La Tech, New Mexico State, that have really good defenses that prevent those big plays. You're going to need to be able to build some drives to continue getting wins. But we'll go next. New Mexico State also had to come back against Tulsa, a big win over the American Conference. We talked about Logan Fife in that highlight. I mean, he was making some incredible throws, had the first one to Donovan Fappel, had another one late in the game that he kind of had to thread a spot right over the middle of the field to the tight end to get the game-winning touchdown. The second half surge there was really impressive for the Aggies, for sure.
And again, it's so good to see Logan Fife thrive under pressure. Like, he never gets rattled throughout the game, and that's so important, obviously, as a quarterback, just kind of being that steady presence for the offense. And again, they just done a really good job of, in my opinion, trying to control both lines of scrimmage. And that's kind of what you see. It's like a common theme in Conference USA right about now, is teams really trying to obviously run the football and be able to set up their play action pass, but also being able to try to stop the run on defense to be able to withstand some of the drives that their teams are trying to put together.
Absolutely. Logan, you know, shout out to the Big Sky, right? He was forged in a really tough FCS conference, and I think that you see that pay. And, you know, he had experience at Fresno State too, so I think you're seeing a lot of his stops and what he's been through kind of come to fruition here. Now that he's in a good system, he's got a great OC in David Yost, who's worked with some incredible quarterbacks, right? I mean, I think that has definitely, helped him a lot. But I think what really has impressed me most about New Mexico State is this defense. Now, of course, you know, it's been Bryant and Tulsa so far. We need to see them against, some more teams, more challenging offenses. But I think what they have been able to do, even against these schools, being able to create havoc, create a lot of turnovers. They're getting a lot of, they're getting into the backfield. Ezra Christensen this past weekend, I feel like every play he was in the backfield. He finished with 3 TFLs. There's a lot of, a lot of dudes on this defense.
And limited in big plays, man. They're limited the amount of big plays the teams are able to make, which, yep, again, a crucial point in games for sure.
Yeah. And then we wrap up our wins here. We'll just kind of talk a little bit about UTEP. This was kind of all minors from the get, right? And we saw two of their, big plays that were featured in our top plays. But this was just a great, breakout game for Malachi Nelson, because I mean, obviously everyone in the country who's heard his name before knows, kind of the struggles he's been through to get to this point, all of the hype, all the expectations that, have kind of fallen short in some of his other stops. And now he's finally getting a chance to be the guy, put up some great numbers. So this was a really great game for him, obviously. It seems like everyone is kind of getting in on the party, for the Miners in this one. But, with these FCS wins, those don't always come as easy for some of our schools. So it does feel good when you see them go out there and, beat someone as if a P4 team would be beating an FCS team.
Correct. Yeah, and I think the most important thing is a confidence builder as well. And you hope that, again, these wins equate to later wins down the road. And again, to your point about Malachi, it's so good to see guys that have had some struggles now have some success. Mm-hmm. And you hope, again, to my point just a second ago, that their success can kind of lead to more success down the road.
Yep, for sure. We'll touch on a couple other games from this past weekend. FIU had to go, they had a tall task against Penn State. And, they fought, right? They fought up until, the late third quarter. I mean, it was a 10-0 game at halftime. It could have been 10-7. FIU was right there at the goal line, had a really tough interception that, if that's 7 points and you go in down 10-7, you're feeling a little better. This one just kind of got away from them, but still saw a lot of good from the FIU defense, which is something that we really haven't seen from them in a while. They're capable of forcing some turnovers, making some plays here, but to be able to see them really hold a Penn State team with a highly regarded Drew Aller, quarterback, in check for a good amount of this game was impressive.
Hey, 2,000-yard rushers to add to that, high-caliber quarterback, right, having Drew Aller. So, again, to see how they responded in a tough environment, obviously with the crowd behind Penn State, it was a treat. It really was to see them play as hard as they did and be able to make stops when they did. Again, I think in the first half, there were like at least 2 or 3 fourth down stops they had that really turned the momentum, well, not turn momentum, but it really obviously helped them for not being able to run the score up early in the game.
Yeah. Yeah. And they were moving the ball well. I think the yardage was almost equal at halftime between,
I was watching Coach Simmons on the sideline, and you could just tell he was kind of frustrated at the end of the game by not scoring. But at any rate, you know, his team really showed that they have problems moving forward.
Yeah. Yeah. And we kind of knew what to expect from them because of the way they looked against Bethune-Cookman. Yeah. Again, this wasn't one that we had a ton of high expectations for, but I think we still had some good takeaways from it. Another one, watched Colorado and Delaware. Nick Minicucci, this was his first start this season after coming off the bench in game one, threw for 312 yards on the road at Colorado. They had a lot of big plays. They just couldn't, when they got down to the red zone, they kind of stalled out a little bit, but it felt like they kind of just ran into a buzzsaw with Colorado and the guys they have on offense.
Yeah, it was interesting. It was a game that you felt like, obviously, in the beginning, it was super close. I was like, man, this game is going to be extremely competitive. Then all of a sudden, you look up, and they're down three scores.
Yeah.
But again, to our point earlier, they really show that they have an opportunity to be a really good football team. And I thought, the backup quarterback came in and did a really good job of kind of steadying the ship for them in the first game, and now he comes out this game and really looked a whole lot better. He looked more comfortable than he did in the first game. So again, you hope that past successes can lead to future.
Right, for sure. And then the last one, another, a loss that really felt pretty good was, I hate saying that, but Louisiana Tech going to Death Valley, taking on LSU. This one was another one that was tight up until the end. LSU finally pulled away. La Tech, got a late touchdown to avoid the shutout. But this La Tech defense is about to be a problem for a lot of our schools. The linebacker trio that they have there, that they built in the transfer portal with Colby Fields, Sifa Leota, and Makai Mason, who's the nation's leader in tackles for loss right now. I mean, you want to talk about someone who's creating havoc. He's one of those dudes. So La Tech's got a big one coming up, and I think as they get into league play, it'll be interesting to see how much they really shape up. If they perform like that against an LSU team.
I just remember, again, Louisiana Tech coming on strong last season defensively, and the defense really leading the pack for them. So, again, to see them now and think about where they were last season, teams are going to have a hard time being able to score points on them, again, because they're so sound defensively. They obviously have playmakers, to your point. And, again, we really right now is just, okay, can you score on offense?
Yep.
Can you create enough offense that's obviously going to make you – ensure that you win games.
Yeah. I think when you're not going against the number three team in the country, some points on offense will definitely come in time. But a good week overall. Looking forward to more opportunities in the non-conference slate coming up. And really, as we get closer to weekday CUSA, I think that we talked about it in the office. This league is going to be wild.
Yeah.
As we saw last year, there were a lot of really great games. I think you should expect more of the same as the season goes on this year.
Really good football.
Yeah.
Really, really good football.
Well, one team playing really good football, the Jacksonville State Gamecocks. We get a chance to have an interview. I don't know where I just was going with that. Took a chance to have an interview with their head coach, Charles Kelly, and coming off of the win against Liberty. And he had a lot of really great things to say, a lot of great sound bites from Charles Kelly. I'm excited for you guys to hear this. So enjoy an interview with Charles Kelly. All right, CUSA Insider fans, we've got interview number two on this jam-packed episode here with Jacksonville State head coach Charles Kelly. Coach Kelly, how are you doing?
I'm good, thank you.
I was going to say, you must be feeling good after this past weekend. Congratulations on your first win as a head coach. Has it sunk in yet for you?
Well, I appreciate that. It was an exciting game. I mean, listen, Liberty's a very well-coached football team. We knew we had to play really good to have a chance to win the game. That's what we were focused on is, doing the things that we had to do to be able to win the game. And people have asked me about it being the first win. Listen, I'm very grateful to be the coach here and very thankful. But this was about our players. It wasn't about me. It was about our, entire university and the players, and they worked really hard. So I'm more proud for them than anything.
When the final seconds ticked off the clock. What kind of emotions, you know, as you got a chance to reflect on this, what kind of emotions came up for you?
Well, first of all, you know, this place is pretty, it's a special place to me because I started my college coaching career here as a full-time coach under Coach Burgess. And, you know, there were a lot of guys that were back at the game that had played for Coach. And, you know, it was kind of neat to be able to come back here and win the game at home here in front of these. I mean, we got great fans. We got great students. We got great alumni, the band. I mean, it all just, this is a special place.
Yeah, you bring up your roots there, starting at Jacksonville State, you know, starting your college coaching career there. You were part of the last transition going from Division II to Division I. Now coming off back-to-back 9-win seasons, when you were in your late 20s there as a position coach for the Gamecocks, did you ever envision being here, A, you know, at the FBS level, but B, being the head coach of this program?
I honestly felt like at some point that Jack State could be very competitive in the FBS. If you look back in the early 70s where Florida State was at, right before Coach Bowden got there, there were a lot of similarities between Jack State and what FSU was back at that time. Listen, you have great support here. You have a great administration. You have a great town. You have great football coaches. You are the 5-hour radius around Jacksonville, Alabama, there are some really good football players and great high school coaches. So anytime you got that close to you, you got a chance to develop, you know, a good football program. And, you know, listen, there have been coaches winning at Jack State for a long time. And there have been some very good coaches. I mean, like I said, it's an honor to coach here with some of the people that have done it before. But, yes, I'll have to say that I thought at some point one day that we could be in this situation. And, you know, that I'll give credit. There are a lot of people. There were a few people that had that vision a long time ago, and they, you know, they worked on that vision. I mean, Greg Seitz, our athletic director, I mean, for what he's done since he's been the AD here is pretty incredible.
Yeah, absolutely. As a communications guy myself, I obviously have a special place for a guy like Greg who comes from a SID background.
I think your background like that, he has vision, you know, he has vision. He knows what, you know, it's supposed to look like. And he's learned from a lot of people and, you know, he gives us resources, all of our sports. He gives us resources to be able to compete and he lets us do our job. And that's, you know, he holds everybody accountable, which is what you got to do as a leader.
Absolutely. You've learned from a lot of people yourself, Coach, just from all your stops in the college ranks. Was there anybody that reached out to you after the game to offer your congratulations for the win?
No, I mean, not after the game. Most of the guys that you work for, you know, or I've worked for in the past, they understand what it is like after the game, you're grading film. I actually heard from Coach Saban last week. Coach Gailey texted me after the game on Saturday. You know, so yeah, I heard from a few of those guys. And of course, everybody, there's so many games, you know, we played that early game. So everybody's getting ready for the next game to watch and see. But yeah, I've heard from most of them, you know, at least before the season. And it's good to hear from them because I wouldn't be where I was at unless it was for all those guys.
You talked a lot about vision there when you were talking about the administration there. For you personally, when you took over the program, how have you, you know, seen the vision kind of come to fruition, and how do you feel like that's starting to take shape after a win like that against Liberty?
Well, first of all, I got to give Rich Rod a lot of credit. He did a really good job while he was here. I think he was definitely the right man for the job at that time. He brought some of his experience in here from, you know, the places that he had been. So I'm actually, because of he and Greg Seitz, I have an advantage because there's some things in place here that both of them put, you know, together to carry us to this next level. So I'm the beneficiary of that. And, you know, the guys here that we didn't have many left, you know, from after he left, but the ones that we had here were, you know, they were hard. They were hard workers. And I think the, you know, for us that, yes, we do things and some things we do exactly the same. Some things we do a little bit different from some of the programs that I, you know, but our whole thing is the development of the player, the whole player, not just athletically, but, you know, academically, socially, emotionally. I mean, there's so many things that affect our players, and we're dealing with 105 young men. So every one of them is going to have a different issue every day. So, but yeah, all those things that we have in place, you know, I think are working towards, we just want to make sure we improve and make this place better every year, you know, going forward.
It's probably an understatement that taking over a head coaching job in 2025 is much different than probably 5 or even 10, certainly 10 years ago. But what's the transition been like, and what have been kind of the biggest differences, some of the challenges that you faced, you know, just in the, I guess, you know, what, 6 to 9 months since you've been there?
Well, I think the biggest is the biggest thing for me was the roster management issue, because and our compliance director, Misty Ray, she told me, she goes, wow, what a year to get your first head coaching job, because we didn't have a lot of answers on, all right, was it going to be a 105 roster limit to begin with? Who were you able to keep, you know, that had been here before? There were a lot of questions. So you didn't know up until about a month before the season what your roster numbers were going to be, you know, and in college football now with the transfer portal, I mean, especially at mid-year, like when I got here, there were 47 guys on scholarship. So we had to one quarterback and one corner. So we had to go out. I mean, we had, it was roster management was the, I think, the biggest issue for us, but that's an issue everywhere. It's not just here. And it wasn't, you know, and everybody has to deal with that. So we just kind of said, all right, this is where we're at. This is where we got to get to. You know, there were some other things that you learn about, you know, as you go through, you know, the recruiting process. And I think the toughest thing for me, listen, I was a former walk-on myself. The thing I dreaded the most was, you know, having to bring some of these guys in here and say, listen, you know, I'm not going to have a spot for you. But it worked out to where we didn't have to do that because of the designated student athletes, things like that, where we'd be able to keep them. But I was dreading that for a long time.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit more about this win. You guys were going up against a Liberty front that I think a lot of people were talking about, and you went out there and gashed them for 338 yards on the ground. Talk to me about the game plan there. What went well for you guys, how you guys were able to execute in the win?
Well, we felt like going into the game, the keys to the game on offense, we felt like we could control the line of scrimmage. We felt like we had an advantage there, even though we're young. I do like, you know, our offensive line. We wanted to put it in our playmakers' hands. We wanted to protect the ball, you know, and we didn't want to, you know, put ourselves in bad situations pre-snap-wise, no pre-snap penalty. So if we didn't get negative yards, you know, on those things, then, you know, we would be okay. And we went through the game. We had zero turnovers. You know, we actually had four turnovers. They turned the ball over twice, but we stopped them, you know, twice on fourth down. So that's like a turnover. I think that was the difference in the game. And you got to figure out who you are as a football team and play to your strength. We think players first, play second. So we want to put it in our playmakers' hands. And, you know, our identity, we want to be fast. We want to be physical. We want to be tough. We want to be disciplined, and we want to compete. And I think we did those things in the game, and that gives us a chance to win. It wasn't always pretty, but it's not always going to be pretty in a game. I mean, you got to give their guys some credit too. They do a good job coaching. They made adjustments in the game, and you know, we were excited to get the win.
You had a tall task in the offseason, having to replace Clay Webb, Tyler Huff, Trey Stewart. You seem to have found an answer. You kind of match it up with, you know, Bubba Grayson, Gavin Wimsatt, and Cam Cook, who are obviously all coming off a great week. Cam and Bubba obviously picking up weekly honors from CUSA this week. What has impressed you most about some of the guys on this offense in the first couple weeks?
Well, the first thing, I'll start with our offensive line. You know, I think we've been playing consistent. Even against UCF, I felt like we controlled the line of scrimmage. I really did. I mean, now, did we win every battle? No. But UCF's got a good football team, as well as Liberty. And I thought those guys, you know, and that's where it starts, is up front. I think Gavin has managed the game, right, really well, which I think that's the most important thing for a quarterback, is to manage the game and make good decisions. He's done that. You know, there'll be some other days where they give us more advantageous looks to be able to throw the ball, and, you know, he'll throw for more yards. And then, you know, our running backs can run good because they're creases in the defense, and that has a lot to do with, you know, our offensive line, our tight ends, and then our receivers out on the outside that, you know, they did a good job of perimeter blocking and things like that. So I think, you know, our offense has a lot of confidence in all of our running backs. I like our whole running back room. Cam got the most of it this time, but we got other guys that we feel like can run the football. If you can run the football and don't turn the football over, you got a chance to win every game that you play. And, you know, it kind of fits our personality of what kind of team we are.
For sure. Yeah, it was obviously two things that worked out very well last year and led to a Conference USA championship. But as you guys look ahead to the rest of the season, you got Georgia Southern coming up this weekend. How do you guys, you know, keep the team balanced? Obviously, I'm sure they're feeling good after an impressive performance against UCF, obviously the big win against Liberty. But now you get another tough test against a Georgia Southern team that was in the New Orleans Bowl last week, and be able to keep the train going back into non-conference play.
Well, first of all, it's one of the toughest places to play in college football. In FBS, I think they have the fourth highest winning percentage, you know, in all of FBS football at home. That's impressive. They're very well coached. Clay Helton's a super football coach. He's got a good coaching staff. They got good players. You know, for us, we got to deal with two things. We got to deal with the rat poison. I mean, the rat poison, people are going to tell you how good you are. They're going to pat you on the back. And we had to deal with a little bit of that after UCF because everybody thought we were going to get blown out. And they were like, oh, you played good, blah, blah, blah. But listen, if you eat that stuff, it's going to kill you. All right, so our guys got to deal with that. You got it. What you did last week has nothing to do with what you're going to do this week. What you did yesterday has nothing to do with today or tomorrow. You got to come out and work today, and hopefully we develop that mindset, you know, that's what we've got to do. We got a hard practice today, and our players know that. They know what to expect. They know it's going to be like that. That's why we say we embrace the grind. You know it's going to be hard, so embrace it.
Amen. Well, Coach, thank you so much for joining the CUSA Insider Podcast. Best of luck this weekend and the rest of the season. And we'll, you know, maybe we'll be seeing you here in a few months.
Thank you.
Thank you to Coach Kelly for joining the CUSA Insider Pod. Great interview, again, coming off of their big win against Liberty. Let's talk a little bit of week three. We start with UConn at Delaware. Delaware hosts a very winnable game. UConn, you know, did give Syracuse a run for their money on the road this past weekend, but it kind of feels like, again, we talked about some of the momentum Delaware's got going for them right now, that, you know, maybe this is a chance for them to get, you know, I know they have a win against Delaware State, but their first win against a FBS foe.
Yeah, I mean, again, Coach Carter is a really good coach. Okay, he's done a really good job at Delaware since he's been there. And again, just like Missouri State just had their kind of program-defining win, Delaware has the exact same opportunities upcoming week, again, in a winnable game, to your point.
Yeah, for sure. And you kind of hope that you see a little bit more comfortability, a little more confidence from Nick Minicucci in this, what will be start two, but really his third full game under center for the Blue Hens. That one will be at 2 o'clock Central Time on ESPN Plus. And then 30 minutes later, we get a big one on CBS Sports. We have SMU at Missouri State. And, you know, obviously you guys hear that and you're like, well, that's a weird one, right? And you know, that's just kind of something the ACC does. They're willing to do these home and homes where they go on the road so they can try and get a road win. But SMU, you know, coming off a tough loss to Baylor, Missouri State, you know, they've got the momentum on their side right now, coming off a big win against Marshall. This one will be interesting because I think that, you know, against an SMU defense that just gave up, you know, 48 points to Baylor, Jacob Clark's got to be licking his chops thinking that they could probably put some points up. You know, even if they don't win, that they're still going to, you know, give the SMU defense a shock.
All they want, for sure. Again, they gave up over 400 yards passing as well. So, again, you look at SMU, though, and you look at a team coming off a college football playoff appearance, right? You look at a team that's coming off a loss. SMU is going to come in, again, expecting to win that game. Again, expecting to rebound off of that game. I think Missouri State can give them all they want, mm-hmm. for one. And then for two, kind of see if they can't create turnovers, create opportunities where they can maybe even win the game at the end.
Yeah, and I know that buzz will be, yeah, abound there in Springfield with a big opponent coming into Plaster Stadium. I'm sure.
Josh, think about this. Your first home FBS game is against SMU.
Crazy.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
Wow, big game.
Very big game. Again, that one's at 2:30 Central on CBS Sports Network. Then we move on to, we'll skip over a few here, but go to Liberty at Bowling Green. You know, we talked a lot about, obviously, Liberty's kind of, you know, licking their wounds a little bit after a tough loss to Jacksonville State. But this feels like an opportunity for them to kind of right the ship a little bit against a MAC school. We saw what they can do on offense. I think we're going to need to see a little bit more from them on defense against this Bowling Green squad. But especially when you look ahead for Liberty to JMU coming to town next week, they really need to get things right before that one.
Yes, absolutely. Especially defensively. Again, you've seen some breakdowns in the defense. Again, just not being able to tackle, right? Particularly when they played Jacksonville State last week. And what you hope is that the offense continues to kind of take the stride, but you hope the defense actually takes the next step.
Yep.
In order to get stops when necessary. Again, I think this is a very talented team. Coach Chadwell obviously is a great coach. And so now, to me, this is a win that they need going into not only JMU the following week, but also Old Dominion the week after. So, again, it's an opportunity for them to create some momentum for their team, belief in their team. And so hopefully they can get that accomplished this weekend.
And I know looking into this last year, I mean, losing back-to-back games isn't something that Jamie Chadwell does, certainly in his time at Liberty. So I don't expect them to go out and, you know, roll over. I think the biggest things on offense, we've kind of seen, you know, the run game is still a little bit of a work in progress for him right now, but a lot of good coming out of the backfield with Ethan Vasco. He's spreading the ball around really well. They've got a lot of great targets. They don't have, you know, that true number one, but I think even if you have, you know, four or five guys that you trust to be able to run some good routes, you're in a good spot. And I really love the way that they're using Juju Gray in that offense as a gadget guy.
Absolutely. Like the way they rolled him out of the backfield last week. It was some special things that they're trying to do with him. And again, to your point, it really feels like they're trying to find that feature back right now as well. So again, we look at what the weapons they have on the outside. Again, they have real good talent, but who's kind of be their separator, their go-to guy that they can obviously lean on?
Yeah, because I think a lot of people thought, just based on some of the preseason prognostications, that it would be Von Blue, but you've seen a lot of Evan Dickens. You've seen a lot of Cameron Smith, or sorry, Cameron Williams. Caden Williams. I almost had it. I was like, he just won freshman of the week one. I should remember his name. So obviously some high expectations for Liberty to kind of get back on track against Bowling Green. That one's at 4:00 Central on ESPN Plus. And then we have a ton of big games, but I think this one, when you talk about FIU, Shula Bowl is, you know, one of the biggest games of the year from them. And this has been something that they haven't won in the Shula Bowl since 2016. And this feels like the year with where FAU is at, with where FIU is at right now. Feels like maybe this is the year for them to finally snap that.
Wow, 2016?
2016.
That's hard to believe.
Yep.
Knowing the amount of talent that has been at FIU. Like, when you consider the number of transfers that have left FIU to go to P4 schools, it kind of tells you that they are a talented team year in and year out. And so you will hope that, again, with what they displayed last week at Penn State, what they showed offensively, particularly in their first week against Bethune, you should see a team that's poised to go out and win this game on Saturday. And hopefully they get it done. I'm almost certain that the crowd is going to show up on Saturday. And then I know Coach Simmons is going to have those guys ready to play.
Yeah, and I think anytime you're playing a team from right up the road, and with these Florida schools, and we talked a little bit about this when Louisiana Tech and LSU played. I know this is a huge deal in Florida too. A lot of these dudes know each other. They've crossed paths, whether it's in high school, whether it's in college now. Like, there's just that added little edge, right? That they want to be, they want to be the kings of South Florida, that little sector of South Florida. So, and if this FIU defense, if they were able to hold Drew Aller in check in Happy Valley, I think that they should be able to handle Caden Veltkamp all right. Yeah, right. Exactly. I think that's the biggest, factor for this one. Jack State, obviously a lot of momentum coming off of their first 2 weeks. They go on the road to kind of a scrappy Georgia Southern team that they're well coached with Clay Helton. They were in the New Orleans Bowl last year. So there's a lot of good things going on for this program. It's a tough place to go win when you look at their history at home. But, again, a lot of things going well for the Gamecocks.
Yeah, to me, I think Georgia Southern is going to try to do everything that they can to stop the run.
Yeah.
And that's going to be, again, predictive of how this outcome is going to be, because I think, one, both teams are going to try to control the line of scrimmage. And then, two, who can have consistent quarterback play, to me, is going to be the difference in that game. Putting all my chips with Jacksonville State, knowing that Coach Kelly has done an excellent job these first 2 weeks of the season. And then, thirdly, Cam Cook, man, that dude, man.
Yeah, and it's not just him. I mean, Charles talks about it a little bit, too. We talked about it earlier in the season when we did their preview episode that, Andrew Paul's another one in that backfield that has, contributed well for them the past year or two. I think for them, we still haven't seen Michael Pettway in this offense. He's been out the first two games. And I'm wondering at what point, if someone is able to stop them on the run and they get him on the field, is what that connection is going to be like between Gavin and Michael. Because I think they can get the pass game going, just knowing Gavin's skill set compared to, Tyler Huff was still a really good passer last year. I think Gavin's got a little bit more, arm there that, once they're able to click in, that'll be an interesting thing to watch.
Hey, you just threw a huge wrinkle at me. I hadn't even thought about Pitway because he's been hurt.
Uh-huh. I know. Yeah. And the fact that they still look as good as they do, just leaning on the run right now. Yeah. And then we finished the night with, I think this probably should be game of the week, right? New Mexico State goes on the road to La Tech. New Mexico State are only undefeated team, 2-0 right now. Going to this La Tech team we've already talked about them plenty with what they can do on defense. I'm excited for this one. Obviously, an early conference matchup, regardless of the teams, is exciting. But this one has the feel of like, all right, who's for real, right?
Right. It certainly does, Josh. And again, to your point, who's going to show up, right? Who's going to show up and be the dominant force on both sides of the ball? I think, man, I can't wait to watch this game. I can't wait. This has probably been the most excited I've been over the last 2 weeks, obviously with Liberty and Jackson State last week, and now with New Mexico State and La Tech this week. Like, I'm getting goosebumps thinking about, again, how these matchups are going to play out.
Yeah, I think the one that's really you're really going to have to watch out for is, can Logan Fife continue to make big plays against this defense? Because I think they're obviously going to struggle against the front seven to move the ball on the ground or move kind of in that short range. But if he's still able to deliver these good throws against, I mean, they have a lot of guys in the secondary on this La Tech team, too. If he can continue to make plays, I feel pretty good about them. But I don't know, man. This La Tech defense feels pretty special. So,
really special.
Yeah. So you guys can catch that one at 6:30 p.m. Central on ESPN+. The ones we did mention, UTEP goes on the road to face Texas. That one's at 3:15 Central on SEC Network. Middle Tennessee at Nevada. Middle Tennessee still looking for that first win. They're on Mountain West Network at 4 Central. And then Kennesaw State also seeking their first win. They've got Merrimack at home, hoping that that's win number one for Jerry Mack and his club. I know that it's been a challenging first couple of weeks, a tight loss to Wake Forest. And then you have to go up to Indiana, another team that went to the playoffs last year and kind of started. You were like, maybe. And then it just got out of hand for them. But this will be the opportunity for us to see, what they can really do on offense once they really get clicking. And then, that one's 5:00 Central on ESPN+. So But again, the one you don't want to miss, New Mexico State, Louisiana Tech, 6:30 Central on ESPN Plus. That'll definitely be a fun one. Excited for week three action. Definitely make sure you got your ESPN subscriptions, whatever you got to do to get these games on. Cause, like we saw in week two, I mean, there's a lot of exciting football across the USA. Absolutely.
Great football.
Yep.
Really good football.
Awesome. Well, Trey, thank you so much for joining me. This has been another amazing episode of the CUSA Insider Podcast. For those of you who are looking to follow us, you can find us on Twitter and Instagram at CUSA Insider Pod. Appreciate everyone who listens on Spotify or Apple Music, Amazon, wherever you listen to your podcast. And for those of you who are watching us on YouTube, thank you for your support. If you haven't watched us, you need to get on here, see this beautiful set. See us fantastic people that put great work into the show, especially Dane back there, our producer. But you can find us at Conference USA on YouTube. Find our CUSA Insider page there. Really appreciate you guys coming in for another episode of the CUSA Insider Pod, the official podcast of Conference USA. I'm Josh Jones, signing off.